The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Finally today, I'm here with online news editor David Grimm, who's here to give us a rundown of some of the recent stories from our daily news site, news.sciencemag.org. So first up, we have an article about punishing cheaters. When it comes to fairness, do we act like Batman?
Well, that's the question we sort of ask. And the reason we sort of invoke Batman is because there's been a controversy in this whole field of cheating. And this is actually something that scientists study. They're trying to figure out when somebody cheats us, say somebody picks your pocket in a subway and you punish them. You want them to see them punished. Do you want to see them punished because you don't think it's fair that they took your money? Or do you want to just see them punished because you're seeking revenge? And I know those two might sound kind of similar, but there's actually a difference between seeking revenge and actually just trying to, what scientists call, avoid inequity aversion. That is, are we just seeking revenge or are we trying to mainly just sort of make sure the scales are sort of even? Mm-hmm. And that's been a really hard thing to tease out. And this new study tries to do that.
So what was the setup for the experiment?
So what they tried to do in this new study was they recruited about 500 people on the internet and they had them play this very simple economic game where they divided everybody into teams of two people. And one person was the cheater and one person was the cheated. There were basically three scenarios. In the first scenario, the cheating partner started out with significantly less money than the cheatee. And the cheating partner could choose to steal 20 cents, but this didn't increase his fortunes enough to equal the fortunes of his partner. In the second scenario, the money was distributed so that if the cheating partner stole 20 cents, basically him and his partner now had the same amount of money. And finally, in the third scenario, if the cheating partner stole 20 cents, he actually ended up with more money than the person that he cheated from. And then what the researchers did is they allowed the partner that had been cheated to pay 10 cents. They could use 10 cents of their money to punish the cheaters for their actions. And what they found in the first two scenarios where the cheater had either not taken enough money to equal the other partner's fortune or taken just enough money to equal the other partner's fortune, there was about the same amount of punishment going on. But in that third scenario where the thief basically took so much money that he actually had more money than the person he stole from, the rate of punishment doubled. And what this suggests to the researchers is that it's our sense of fairness. We really feel like that's unfair. If someone steals money from us, it's that sense of unfairness that really motivates us to punish them, not just, hey, they stole some money, they should be punished, but they're stealing money and it's making things unfair. When they do that, we want to sort of set things right again.
Maybe kind of like Bernie Madoff is the example of this tycoon who took everyone's money.
And exactly.
And everyone was very furious about this.
Exactly. And the question is, do we want to punish Bernie Madoff just because he took money? Or do we want to punish him because he took so much money and enriched himself so much while making other people potentially very poor? And this study suggests it's really the latter. What he did created such a vast gulf of unfairness that that's really what we're trying to punish.
So from our superhero sense of fairness to what's fair in the rodent world, you have another story about rodents robbing each other in the rainforest.
Right. This is another story about robbing. This robbing, though, seems to have had positive consequences. The story deals with a plant called the black palm tree, which lives in Panama. And this tree has these really big seeds. They're about the size of a cherry, and they're located in this fleshy fruit at the top of the plant. And the seeds are in such a place, I mean, they're really high up on the plant and they're really big, that you would think, well, maybe only a really big animal should be able to get up there, grab the seeds, and for lack of a better word, poop them out somewhere else. So that would cause new black palm trees to be seeded in other places. Mm-hmm. The problem is that scenario actually used to exist. About 10,000 years ago, there was an elephant-like creature called a gompothere, which lived in the same place that these trees do, which is in Panama. It was big enough to be able to grab that fruit and eat it and poop those seeds out all over the place. Mm-hmm. And that was great for the plant. The problem is these gompotheres went extinct about 10,000 years ago, and the plants are still around. So the question is, how are these plants still around if the animal that's supposed to be helping them survive has been gone for thousands and thousands of years?
So there was an empty niche open.
Exactly. And that's where the rodents come in. This is a cat-sized rodent called the agouti. And researchers already knew that the agouti played some sort of role with the seeds of this black palm tree. They had observed the agouti take these seeds, they bury them in a certain place, and they sort of use them as a backup food source. So if food runs out, they go back to where they bury the seeds and eat them. Well, that's not really great for the trees, because if the seeds get eaten, the rodents actually tend to eat the seeds in such a way that they destroy them. So it's not like they can poop them out and create new plants like the gomphotheres did. But they also noticed that the rodents didn't always go back and eat the seeds. Sometimes they would just transport them to a location, forget about them, and theoretically that would grow into a new plant. But the question was, were the agouti really transporting these seeds far enough and wide enough that it really would have a positive impact on the population of these black palm trees? And that's sort of where the new study comes in.
So how did they test the movement of these seeds?
What they did was they actually attached radio trackers to 589 of these seeds, and they placed the seeds at 52 different sites on Panama's Barro, Colorado Island. And what was funny is right away the agouti sort of ran to these piles of seeds. They took them and they started hiding them. And the researchers were able to track these seeds over about the course of a year. And you can actually see a video on the site of these seeds sort of moving from place to place over a year. It's pretty cool. And what they found is that the agouti were really transporting these seeds really far away, sometimes as far away as 280 meters. Sometimes they were moving the seeds more than once a day. So they were moving these seeds all over the place. And sometimes they were eating them, but sometimes they were just forgetting about them. And their conclusion from all this is that the agouti really are transporting these seeds far enough and wide enough that it appears that they've really kept this black palm tree going for thousands of years, even though the creature that it relied on, the gomphothere, has been extinct for a long time.
And finally, from rodents helping an ecosystem, our next story is on algae cooling the planet.
Well, Edward, this story has to do with the question of whether algae that live in the ocean actually play a major role in the climate on Earth. And there's been a hypothesis called the iron hypothesis that's been going around for a while now, which suggests that dust blown from land that's very rich in iron lands in the ocean. Algae eat this dust and they like the iron. And as they're eating the iron, they grow bigger and bigger and bigger. And these algae are photosynthesizing. And to photosynthesize, they're actually sucking up carbon from the atmosphere. So they suck up all this carbon, they grow bigger and bigger, they suck up more and more carbon, and then they die and they sink to the bottom of the ocean. And the reason that can cause climate change is because CO2 is a greenhouse gas. So if you're sucking a lot of it out of the atmosphere, you're potentially cooling the planet. And scientists had suggested that potentially some of the effect may have been so dramatic that some of the past ice ages on Earth may have been caused simply by dust falling under the ocean, and you have these huge, what are called algal blooms forming, and that could have sucked enough CO2 from the atmosphere to really lower Earth's temperatures. But nobody has been able to show this, and obviously it's a hard thing to prove, because how are you gonna recreate this in the real world?
Yeah, so how did the researchers go about testing this hypothesis in the open ocean?
And actually, the researchers actually did go out and test this in the real world. They went to the Southern Ocean, and what they did that was really neat is they looked for what are called eddies, which are these basically big whirlpools in the ocean. The reason they wanted to look for these is because they wanted to add a lot of iron to the water, but they wanted to find a way to mix it. I mean, you can't just sort of stir, you know, get an oar out and stir a bunch of iron into the water. So they actually looked for these whirlpools, which are sort of these natural spinning beakers in the water. And they found one. They dumped a bunch of iron, actually 14 tons of iron sulfate, into the seawater. And then they monitored algae growth over the course of several weeks. And what they found was they were able to actually create this huge algal bloom, which swelled to over 800 square kilometers. And they were able to observe this via satellite. And what they did is, once this bloom formed, they sort of, and this is a very rough patch of ocean, they would drive their boat in there every few days, take some samples, and see what was happening with the algae. And first of all, obviously, the algae were really growing a lot, which suggests that the iron really does play a big role in their growth. But what they also found is that over the course of a few weeks, at least half of the total biomass of all of this algae sank to a depth of below 1,000 meters in the ocean, which means that if these guys really were sucking up carbon dioxide from the air, which they probably were because they had to grow that much, they were not only sucking it up, but they were basically sequestering it down in the bottom of the ocean and taking it out of the atmosphere. And theoretically, if this was happening on a very large scale, it could actually have a significant impact on global temperatures.
So geoengineering is still kind of a touchy subject. Is this a potential approach for dealing with climate change?
Right. So geoengineering, this is this whole idea that, you know, the Earth is warming. Is there something man-made that we can do to sort of combat global warming, reverse it, or even if you can't reverse it, maybe ameliorate it a bit. And one of the ideas has actually been throwing a bunch of iron into the ocean, creating these huge algal blooms and seeing if we can maybe not create another ice age, but at least cool the world enough that it would lower global temperatures a bit. But as you suggested, this is very controversial, this whole idea of sort of mucking with nature. People really don't know what the side effects would be of creating these huge algal blooms. Yes, it might cool the air a bit, but it could have other consequences as well. So researchers are saying, just based on this one study, we really shouldn't go ahead with this until we know a whole lot more about how this process works.
And what else have we had on the site this week?
Well, for Science Now, we've got a story about the farthest spiral galaxy ever discovered. Also a story about how mosses use scent to attract pollinators. For Science Insider, our policy blog, we've got a story about new figures on the global AIDS epidemic. Also a story about what the future holds for funding at the National Institutes of Health. And finally, for Science Live, this week's Science Live is about science and the Olympics. How is science both leveling and unleveling the playing field? So be sure to check out all of these stories on the site.
Thanks, David. David Grimm is the online news editor for Science. You can check out all our news at news.sciencemag.org, including daily stories from Science Now and science policy from Science Insider. While you're there, be sure to check out Science Live, a live chat on the hottest science topics every Thursday at 3 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time.